it almost feels like there's a war at there's a war going on right now with our base.
Republicans are sending up mailers lambasting their former nominee. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 28th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, controversial rule changes to the Iditarod.
You can bet that someone's going to call home to get help and outside assistance.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Alaska Republican Party is attacking U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller in a series of hard-hitting mailers. This is the same Joe Miller who was the Republican Party's own nominee 6 years ago. That's when he beat incumbent Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski in the primaries. Now, the party is accepting money from Murkowski's campaign to use against Miller. Miller calls that money laundering, but the party says it's perfectly legal. APRN's Liz Ruskin sorts through the ironies.
Shannon Connolly has received three of the anti-Miller mailers so far, and she's upset the Republican Party, her party, is sending them.
It almost feels like there's a war going on right now with our base.
Connolly was the Republican district chair for Greater Palmer, but stepped down in September so she could openly support Miller, a conservative running this time as a libertarian. Connolly says he better represents the Republican platform. The first two mailers the Republican Party sent rehashed the story of how Miller had to resign from his Fairbanks North Star borough job in 2009 for misusing his coworkers' computers. The third flyer tells how he deleted thousands of borough emails, and it compares Miller to Hillary Clinton. Connolly thought that was a low blow.
To Republican people who follow the platform, that is quite the insult.
Republican State Party Chair Tuckerman Babcock acknowledges a certain dissonance, especially since he's working to elect Murkowski and presidential nominee Donald Trump, but Murkowski has denounced Trump.
It's a strange place for me to be, as Tuckerman Babcock, certainly. As far as the Republican Party, our mission is clear. We defer to the Republican primary voters. They're the people who tell us these are our candidates. And then we are obligated to support the election of every Republican candidate who's nominated.
Murkowski won the Republican nomination this year, and Miller didn't run in the primary. So Babcock says he's doing what's right for the GOP.
It is important for the Republican Party to make a statement to anyone who's thinking about running as a third party and wants to skip the Republican primary, that they will face a full-throated opposition from the Republican Party.
And Babcock is paying for that full-throated attack primarily with money Murkowski last month transferred from her campaign to state party coffers, more than $150,000. Miller says the transfer is legally suspect. Here's Miller campaign aide Matt Johnson.
Well, we don't know for sure, but the implications, if all of this money was spent on her behalf, the implications are that essentially the Murkowski campaign is laundering money.
Murkowski's campaign attorney, Tim McKeever, says the transfer of money was entirely legal.
There's no limit on the amount of the transfer of excess campaign funds that can be made by a candidate's committee to their state party. Senator Portman from Ohio just made a transfer of $1 million to the Ohio State Party.
McKeever says federal law doesn't limit when such transfers can take place or what the party can do with the money. Babcock says it's not laundering because he, as party chairman, was free to ignore any of the campaign's recommendations and says he spent the money as he saw fit. If you want proof of that, he says wait until the fourth anti-Miller mailer hits mailboxes on Monday. It's the first in the series to promote Murkowski by name, and Babcock added something Murkowski would not, a plug for Donald Trump. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Libertarian vice presidential candidate Bill Weld is in Anchorage this week trying to shore up support for his running mate, Gary Johnson, and to increase the visibility of the Libertarian Party in Alaska.
We have two objectives now. Not having gotten into the debates, I think the chances of our running the table because of the superiority of our ticket are hugely diminished. But in addition to trying to pick up states, we also want to make sure that we get over 5% nationally, which would give the Libertarian Party a permanent seat at the table going forward, which I think would be good for Washington. It would enable us to have matching funds and not have to worry about ballot access.
Weld says he is not an expert on many of the issues faced by Alaska Natives and people in rural areas, but he is familiar with resource development. He wants to open up more of Alaska to energy exploration and production. Weld says the U.S. is too Eurocentric in its trade policy and noted that Alaska is in a great place, geographically speaking, to take advantage of the growth of the Pan-Pacific region. Weld supports the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement signed by President Obama that's derided by conservatives for being too good a deal for Asian nations. Weld says he believes the Libertarian Party platform is a good fit for the state, but that the state's Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate, Joe Miller, is not a good fit for the party.
Mr. Miller doesn't really represent either my point of view or the National Libertarian Party's point of view. Fine guy, but not in tune with Gary Johnson's and my thinking.
Polls show the Johnson-Weld ticket has between 9 and 18% support in Alaska, about double than the national average. Mushers are expressing frustration over two controversial rule changes to the Iditarod. They were made during a board meeting today. For the first time, the race's trail committee will allow the use of two-way communication devices along the trail, including cell phones and satellite phones. In a release, the organization writes that they think it will make for a safer race. Mushers have been critical of the rule, saying it represents one of the biggest changes ever made. Wade Mars is an Iditarod veteran and was at the board meeting.
Every musher there was opposed to the rule. It will change the racetrack, yeah, I believe.
Mushers say that because participants can now use two-way communication devices, it could open the door to coaching and unfair advantages, a violation of race rules.
You can bet that someone's going to call home and get help and outside assistance.
Another source of tension from today's meeting is a decision to change where equipment can be carried on sleds. Rumors were circulating that the measure was a ban on trailers, which have been used by many of the top-performing mushers these last few years to haul dogs, supplies, and even a stove. The Iditarod Trail Committee says that that is not the case and will be sending out the new official language to competitors on Monday. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at what sled dogs bring to Denali National Park.
A form of peace and quiet and wildness that's getting more and more rare. And so it's more and more valuable that we continue that heritage here.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The Alaska Department of Corrections Commissioner is traveling to far-flung corners of the state in preparation for more budget cuts. Dean Williams is visiting all 15 towns that are part of the DOC Community Jails Program. The program supports jails from Haines to Dillingham to Kotzebue. In recent years, budget cuts to the Community Jails Program trickled down to law enforcement in those communities, causing places like Haines to put off hiring more police officers. DOC spokesperson Corey Allen Young says Commissioner Williams wants to understand the best ways to deal with cuts to the program.
Nothing really is set in stone, but in order to fully get an understanding and make a decision that's wise and efficient and maintains that safety, you do have to look at all options and actually go to these places to see what's being done in the communities.
Alan Young says everything is on the table, and the department is looking at both rural jails and major facilities. They recently closed the Palmer Correctional Center. Alan Young says the commissioner will also talk to community leaders about the impacts of SB 91, the omnibus criminal justice reform bill that passed the state legislature earlier this year. It will require DOC to establish new pre-trial services by early 2018, and that could impact communities. The goal is to reduce the number of people held in prison for nonviolent crimes. Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation is working on new guidelines for Hawk Inlet, the location of the Greens Creek mine. Last spring, an environmental advocacy group found elevated levels of mercury in a seal harvested near the inlet. That set off alarm bells for nearby village, which is dependent on subsistence foods. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has a story.
So, let's see. It's an informal meeting.
There was barely an empty seat in the small rectangular conference room in DEC offices. Staff repeatedly reminded the crowd this wasn't a hearing. It was a chance for the agency to share a report it put together on Hawk Inlet. Still, many in the crowd gave passionate testimony, including Albert Howard, Angoon's mayor and tribal president.
It's in the back of our minds every day now until we actually get answers to what's happening. I mean, and it's even more so now because there wasn't any salmon to speak of for us to fall back on.
Howard sent a letter to the state earlier this year asking for help, but he doesn't feel like his concerns were heard. And these new guidelines don't do enough. He says people in the village are still scared to harvest seal. And Greens Creek Mine hasn't been held responsible for its past violations. In 1989, the company spilled an unknown amount of ore into the inlet.
The problem's still there, and it's happening every day.
This document is a step toward finding that solution.
That's Michelle Hale, the director of the DEC. Before the Friends of Admiralty Island discovered high levels of mercury in the seal, Hawk Inlet was already listed as an impaired water body. That prompts the state to put together a report to submit to the federal government. The report on Hawk Inlet details recent and past monitoring tests, including information gathered by the Friends of Admiralty Island. Gretchen Peichel, an environmental program specialist at DEC, says when the agency crunched all the numbers, it found the inlet to be healthy overall, with a couple of sites that should be monitored more closely.
This plan doesn't clean up waters, but actions do.
One of the plan's recommendations is to cast a wider net when it comes to monitoring the area. Another is to post warning signs near the inlet, not to gather food near the mine's discharge area. But these are suggestions, not requirements. The state can work with the Greens Creek mine to implement the changes when the company's permit is up for review in about 4 years, but it can't force the mine to change anything now. Meanwhile, the report didn't identify how the seal could have had such high levels of mercury. Michelle Hale with DEC said the mercury could have come from somewhere else.
It could be air deposition from China because we know that happens in some places. We don't know that source right now. So we don't know that, and we need to find that out.
But for Albert Howard, that answer wasn't satisfying. He still has questions about the historic ore spill and questions about how today's monitoring is done.
I don't agree with him because there's no checks and balances there. There's no, well, if you spill ore, this is what's going to happen. You know, there's nothing there. There's no mechanism to prevent them from irreparable harm.
More than anything, Howard said he'd like to see the mine cleaned up, this time for good. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
As Election Day approaches, we've been checking in with voters around the state, asking them what they think matters most and who they're supporting for president. Tonight, we visit the Trump campaign headquarters in Anchorage to hear from volunteer Margie Ward. Ward is 68. Her husband, former state Senator Jerry Ward, is the Alaska state director for the Trump campaign. She's a longtime activist in Republican politics, but she says Donald Trump is the first presidential candidate she's worked for since Pratt Buchanan's primary run in 1996. Rachel Waldholtz from Alaska's Energy Desk paid her a visit.
The Trump campaign's Alaska headquarters occupies half of a small blue commercial building off the old Seward Highway in South Anchorage. The other half of the building is home to Jerry and Margie Ward's real estate business. And if you come looking for Trump yard signs or bumper stickers, Margie Ward is the one who will get you set up.
Hi, Hi, I'm looking for Margie Ward.
Hi,
I'm Rachel Waldholz with Alaska Public Media.
Inside, the television is tuned to coverage of the most recent Trump rally.
Where would you like to? We can meet back there. That's the Trump room back there.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, let's meet there.
As we sit down, Ward says her top priorities this election are jobs for Alaskans and making sure her children and grandchildren have the same opportunities she's had. She supported Donald Trump from the very beginning.
When he spoke, it sounded like to me that he was speaking from his heart rather than some manuscript or something that was so political that it was weighed very heavily before he said it. He just spoke from his heart, and I kind of appreciate a person who doesn't need to read a speech or have made up words for them, that they speak their own words and speak from their heart. And he seemed to do that to me.
Even when those words are sometimes maybe intemperate, or people have accused him of being inflammatory or even racist, you don't hear that?
No, I do hear that. I hear it, but I don't hear it the same way maybe you hear it. I hear it as a working man who has had to work with working people. I come from a family where my brothers worked in the construction field. I understand that. I also think that sometimes we are brought up in Alaska with a softer side than, say, a person from New York, and I understand that difference as well.
And so when you vote for president, what are the issues that matter most to you? What do you care about?
Well, I care about employment. And I also care about the justices that are going to be appointed. I think that's a real concern. And I usually think of my my grandsons and my granddaughters, what their life is going to be like. I want to see them have an opportunity to have an Alaskan like I grew up in, and like I've known. And I don't think that they'll get that with Hillary Clinton.
What is it that you worry about if Hillary Clinton were elected?
I worry about her getting us into a war and having to have the young people sacrifice their lives for a war that we can't and shouldn't be involved in. That's what I'm concerned about.
We're now less than 2 weeks from Election Day, and the polls show Donald Trump probably losing, if they're right. Do you worry about that, and what's your reaction going to be if he does lose?
I don't really put a lot of weight in polls. They change daily. I think that Mr. Trump will win. I think he will prevail. And I think he'll be a great president.
And what are you going to do if it turns out that the polls are right and Hillary Clinton wins on Election Day? How will you feel the day after?
I believe that there will be a huge change, and it won't be for the better. It will be maybe what some people refer to as the last days and so forth. And I believe that probably will occur.
So you really feel like the fate of the country is on the line in the next week and a half?
Yeah, I do. I believe it's that important.
That was Donald Trump volunteer Margie Ward speaking with Rachel Waldholz of Alaska's Energy Desk. You can hear our full series of interviews with Alaska voters online at alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future that delivers oil today and sustains operations for tomorrow. From military might to counterculture cool to camo chic, camouflage in plain sight exposes the ancient yet modern art of concealment. See camouflage at the Anchorage Museum through February the 5th. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum. And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Dog Park. There's only one national park in America where some of the rangers are canines, Denali National Park. In the summers, the dogs serve as ambassadors, but during the winter months, they ferry researchers and park employees through areas closed to motorized vehicles. Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk spent a day at the Denali Kennels as the dogs prepare for winter.
Early on a crisp fall morning, a large white truck sits alone in a dirt parking lot at Riley Creek Campground. Denali Kennel manager Jennifer Raffaelli takes six huskies out of the van, fits them in harnesses, and hooks them to a line attached to a green metal cart that looks a lot like a dune buggy. Raffaelli fastens her helmet.
Ready? Let's go!
On the trail, the only sound is the wheels whirring along the ground. The six dog teams pull two humans around trails that wind in and around the campground. On this day, each team is running about 5 miles, and then it's back to the kennel. By the start of the winter season, the dogs will be doing 20-mile days, and over the course of the winter, they will log around 1,500 miles each. It may seem backwards, but Jennifer Raffaelli says winter is the easiest time to move cargo through the park.
Swamps and bogs and thick brush are the norm across Alaska, and that is challenging slow going, especially if you're trying to move big, heavy objects. So really, when it's covered in snow and when rivers are frozen, you can carry huge loads because you're not carrying them on your back. You're sliding them over snow and ice, and that's no problem for these guys.
Raffaelli says pound for pound, sled dogs are the strongest draft animals on the planet, making them the perfect tool for transportation through Denali's designated wilderness, areas of the park that prohibit motorized vehicles. And dogs have been a part of Denali throughout the entire history of the park. In 1921, when Harry Karstens was hired as the park's first superintendent, he insisted upon having dogs.
It made perfect sense that you created a two-million-acre park, which is a huge area to try and cover as one person, that you were going to need some dog teams to do that.
Raffaelli says back then, dogs were the only way rangers could traverse the park and protect wildlife like caribou and doll sheep from poaching. But over the years, the role of Denali sled dogs has changed. In 1980, the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act labeled the original 2 million acres of Denali as wilderness, the highest level of federal land protection, giving renewed purpose to the park's sled dogs.
The Wilderness Act requires that land managers look at the minimum tool available for the task at hand. And in this case, the minimum tool is the dog teams. So we're always asking, can we accomplish this project with dog teams?
And if they can, they will. Over the winter, the teams will be out for up to 5 weeks at a time. They haul supplies, support glacier research, monitor man-made noise, and assess conditions for other park users. Plus, Raffaelli believes meeting a dog team working in the field adds to the wilderness experience.
To encounter only a dog team on the trail and no snow machines and no other forms of motorized transport is a form of peace and quiet and wildness that's getting more and more rare. And so it's more and more valuable that we continue that heritage here.
A heritage that in many ways is fading. Denali's huskies aren't just the best method of winter transport. They help preserve what many people remember as daily life in Alaska. But in a rapidly changing climate, Raffaelli is uncertain about the future for the dogs.
If we start to get warmer winters with less snow, how does that affect the dogs? How do we evolve to face that new environment? I think those are really valid questions, but at the core of it all, I hope that the dogs are always part of the story because they are such a special part of it.
Back on the trail, the dogs are finishing their 30-minute morning workout. Raffaelli pulls into the campground parking lot and eases the team to a stop.
Oh, good dogs.
She jumps off and ladles water into one tin dog bowl after another.
Are you thirsty?
The dogs lap it up. When they are done, the dogs go back into the van and it's time for Raffaelli to get the next team ready for their 5 miles on the trail. And there's no question, they love their job. For AK, I'm Zoe Sobel in Denali National Park.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Starla Heim in Anchorage. Heim is the owner of Dooley's Tuxedos and Costumes, which she inherited from her mother. After almost 50 years of business, Dooley's will be closing its doors the day after Halloween.
My mom, you know, she was a house you know, stay-at-home mom. And so the thought of her going to work just killed me. So I went to work with her every day. And I had a lot of different aspirations on what we could do with the business. And we went many different ways. But leaving never was a thought for me. No, I just always wanted to be part of this, part of the business, and part of what, you know, she had created. I have so many people that come in, and they'll always come in and say, the people in Alaska are so amazing. The people in Alaska treat you well. That's just the thing my mom used to always say to our customers. She's like, I don't know how the weather is going to treat you, but I know the people will treat you good, because that's just, we're just a different breed up here, of just a real breed. I'm not a fan of the sun, and I'm not a fan of the heat at all. And I just, I love to go to tropical places for the relaxation part of it, but I always stay indoors or in the air conditioning, you know? I mean, I'm not gonna complain. So when we get sun up here, it's nice. Don't get me wrong, but I stay inside. Our fur rendezvous in February is nothing like what it was when I was growing up as a child, you know? These guys are all saying, it's 20 degrees out, we don't want to go watch the dog sled races. Whereas my mom and dad would be like, it's 20 below, bundle up, we're going to the dog sled races. There was no question. You know, that's kind of the difference between then and now. But that's just something, you know, you did. You bundled up and you just dealt with the cold. You dealt with the snow. You embraced it. We get calls all the time saying, or even questions saying, this is a strange request. And I just kind of laugh and think, there's no strange request around here. We're a costume shop. They're never going to really be weatherproof, but for kids, you just have to buy them big. And it's funny because you've got the parents that will buy them to go over the snowsuits, and then you've got the parents that will just have, make them wear their snowsuits over their costume. It's just, it's back and forth. But yeah, we definitely is, that's something we think about size-wise.
Starla Heim lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zoe Sobel and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, or follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Rachel Waldholtz, Sean Dugan, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Emily Files in Haines, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Ann Hellman. Have a fantastic weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
There are changes to the way you can share your thoughts or concerns with the University of Alaska Board of Regents. You can phone from anywhere in Alaska and provide your testimony to the Regents on Monday, October 31st from 4 to 6 p.m., or attend an informal evening gathering in Fairbanks on Thursday, November 10th from 5:30 to 7. You can also write to the Regents at alaska.edu/BOR/public-testimony. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Alaska has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, but together we can change that one life at a time. The Statewide Suicide Prevention Council has the resources and training to prevent suicide and support healing for individuals in need. Be the one to ask if someone is thinking about suicide and connect them to help. Visit StopSuicideAlaska.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.